All right. Chill the fuck out. Yeah, I know this is a controversial topic, but that doesn't mean you gotta be an asshole about it. This topic is heavily debated all across the public sphere and politics, and has been for decades. And a lot of people will tell you that scientists have been debating it too. From no one understanding that climate change isn't global warming, to global warming being its own can of worms, to the massive web of corruption, making sure that we don't do anything about it, to all of the industries that pollute our world, we're going to talk about climate change. All on this episode of Why Aren't You Talking About This? Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Waitat. I'm your host, William, and I will be your guide to the, once again, eco-warrior rage-filled episode. But before we get into it, I just want to thank you so much for listening. It means the world to have my voice beating down the door of your brain and squatting in there, because if you thought that eviction notice from last week was going to work, you've got another thing coming. Unless that was on Nerd. Whatever, listen to that show, too. Although, I guess if you're listening to this, you probably listened to me telling you to listen to this on Nerd. Well, how about you just keep going back and forth, then? And speaking of which, you can help grow my analytics and make the dopamine numbers and pipe dream vision of this being my full-time job grow by not only continuing to stream and download the show, but also by giving a follow, on Twitter, not going to call it X, fuck off. Mastodon, and subscribing on YouTube. Make sure to leave likes and comments so everyone knows I'm not a bot, and can also be trusted with the ability to talk. And spread the word to your friends, family, wife, girlfriend, mistress, husband, boyfriend, and mister, and any other loved ones you might be hiding from your partner. Hell, spread the word to your worst enemies by chucking a speaker through their open window playing my podcast. But, not me. It kind of defeat the purpose of spreading the show, and also your partner was going to find out about your secret family sooner or later, so it's kind of weird that you're blaming me. Anyways, on to the show. Alright, everybody. Are you ready for another heavily science-y episode where we talk about why God is dead and how we killed him? No? Good. This time we're going to be talking about climate change and what exactly that is, why it's so hotly debated, and also why it isn't global warming. So first, of course, we have to talk about what this even is. Climate change is the term used for long-term alterations in average weather patterns that define climate. That's what a climate is, by the way. Weather patterns, by temperature, humidity, and precipitation over a number of seasons, decades, measured as an average for a particular area. And this is often used interchangeably with global warming, but they aren't actually really the same things. And the name global warming is also pretty deceptive, because that actually doesn't mean that everywhere is getting hotter. Rather, it just means an increase in global average temperatures, especially since the 1850s, which, if you don't know math, means you add together all the temperature averages across all regions in the world and divide it by the number of regions you measured to find the global average temperature. So if you have three regions having record low winters and 97 having record-setting hot summers, then the world is still getting hotter even if you're seeing snow in Texas. Get your head out of your ass and into mine. And because your skull contains more air than gray matter, I'm also going to explain weather. This is just atmospheric conditions that occur locally over a short period of time. Nothing too crazy. But we should also cover two ideas that are very, very important to understand this topic. Anthropogenic climate change and the greenhouse effect. anthropogenic climate change is just human-caused climate change. Pogenic is basically science for caused, and you're a fucking furry, so you know what anthro means. The greenhouse effect, on the other hand, is a law of reality that essentially allows life to exist. Basically, when heat from the sun hits a planet, that heat radiates out from the surface of the planet. And if the planet has no greenhouse gases, it would get transferred into the cold vacuum of space. But greenhouse gases are gases that absorb heat very well and aren't good at letting it back out, which increases the heat of the planet. And this is normally a good thing because these gases let life happen, but can also be bad. Like what's happening to Earth right now, or with Venus, where the amount of greenhouse gases is causing surface temperatures of 867 degrees Fahrenheit, hot enough to vaporize water instantly, and still also not as hot as my girlfriend. Love you, baby. Anyways, there's five major gases that have this greenhouse effect. First and most prominent is CO2. You know, the thing that you breathe out and also use to sit under the bleachers and huff out of canisters in high school. Next is methane. You know, the thing that you fart and also use to sit under the bleachers and huff out of your girlfriend's butthole in college. Third is nitrous oxide, which is, you know, the thing that makes you feel loopy and happy at the dentist's office, and is also the only thing that gives you even a modicum of feeling okay because you're an adult now and don't have the time to do drugs or eat ass under the bleachers anymore. Fourth is fluorinated gas from industry manufacturing. Stuff that's straight up toxic, like hydrofluorocarbons, which are used for AC units and refrigerators, and propellant or sulfur hexafluoride, which is used to insulate electrical equipment. Useful, but also incredibly toxic, and also doesn't go away very fast. And then finally, and most deadly of all, water vapor. Yeah, water vapor is a greenhouse gas. But these five, alongside several other gases, work to trap heat in the atmosphere, and runaway greenhouse effects are often cited as a major cause of anthropogenic climate change. Hold up, I hear you say. I watch Fox News and they told me that climate change isn't our fault, even if it is real, because we're just pulling out of an ice age. Now, besides me wanting to get the smothering pillow again, you do actually bring up a valid point. Where's the evidence that's happening? Well, lucky for you, I have a silly little list of things that we've seen that indicate climate change. Firstly, we have the increase in global temperature rise. Since the 19th century, our average global temperature has risen about 1 degree Celsius, or about 2 degrees Fahrenheit. Which might not sound like much, but keep in mind the increase in local temperatures, to affect global temperature has to either be widespread or massive. But most of that has been in the last 40 years, and also 2016 and 2020 were the hottest years to ever be recorded. And as a part of that, the oceans are getting hotter. The top 100 meters, about 300 feet, of the ocean have increased a third of a degree Celsius since 1969, which again is a global average, and while it's not as hot as the land, that is still pretty substantial for water. But if that doesn't convince you, you know what might? We're losing ice sheets. Arctic sea ice is declining, so much so that you can travel across the North Pole by ship from Russia to Canada or Canada to Russia, which isn't good for a number of reasons, but important here is the lack of ice. And since 1993, Greenland has lost about 279 billion tons of ice per year, and Antarctica has lost 148 billion tons of ice in the same amount of time. Now, if your brain is as sopping as your jeans, you might be sitting there unsure if this is a big deal. Let me tell you, it is. Because you know how ice is reflective? Yeah, that's very important for that greenhouse effect we were talking about. Because a lot of the sun's heat comes to us in the form of light. So having these two massive fuck-off pieces of ice protected us from getting hotter. And now that the ice is melting, less and less of it is protecting our susceptible Arosi from that massive 150 kilometer long sunschlong. which is the same for snow coverage, which is decreasing steadily every year and sticks around for a shorter amount of time, which does the same thing as reduced ice at the poles. Added to that, glaciers across the world are retreating, aka melting, causing the same issues. The other reason why losing this ice is very important is because in the last 100 years, sea levels have risen about 20 centimeters. In the last 2 decades, that's both doubled and accelerates every year. And do you know where that ice is coming from? Yep, that's right. These ice sheets that we're losing. Now, 20 centimeters might not sound like much, which I do gotta say is brave coming from a man who's 2 centimeters on a good day. But keep in mind that New Orleans is about 7 feet below sea level, and 20 centimeters is quickly approaching a full... And 20 centimeters is quickly approaching 1 full foot. Meaning that if this continues at this rate, we might lose New Orleans conservatively by 2030. Oh, also our oceans are becoming a lot more acidic. Around 30% more acidic since the 1850s, and in recent decades has absorbed 7.2 to 10.8 billion metric tons of carbon dioxide, creating both bicarbonate and also carbonic acid, which eats away at things like calcium, which kills reefs and the shells of mollusks, which I guess we've been noticing less of. Exactly. Reefs and mollusks. Almost like all of this is true, and things are observable in the environment. And of course, finally, we have more extreme weather. I'm going to say, if you haven't noticed this one, I need you to do 2 things for me. First, stop being stupid. Second, touch grass. Everywhere in the world is having more extreme and frequent forms of weather patterns. Basically constantly. Like up here in the Pacific Northwest where I'm at, it floods basically every year. It rains like 3/4 of the year. And the last quarter is the driest fucking drought you can imagine. Oh, and also everything is on fire. Or like in the Midwest, they've been getting more extreme blizzards, colder winters, and tornadoes have been expanding northward for decades. Okay. So if that's enough evidence for you, we should also look at some causes. Because yes, there are natural causes, but you're going to see why those aren't really at fault for, like, the current signs that we have. Beginning with volcanic eruptions. Basically, when a volcano erupts, it not only releases a bunch of ash and particulate way fucking high in the air, but they also produce a shit fuck of CO2 and other greenhouse gases, which not only blocks out the sun, but increases the amount of greenhouse gas in the atmosphere, which can cause some weird effects, like reducing the temperature of a local area with high elevation ash clouds blocking out sunlight, while in other areas, and long term, increasing the global temperature because the amount of greenhouse gas that can sometimes take thousands of years to dissipate, which has happened before. However, to have the same effect that we're seeing today, we'd have to see a volcanic eruption every couple hours or have a couple Titanic ones. Like if the Yellowstone supervolcano goes off, which, if it does, most of the US would be fucking dead before we heard the news. With that comforting thought, also fluctuations in solar radiation can cause heat change. Sunspots, which are bunches of more intense heat on the sun's surface, can cause heat fluctuations. Every 11 years, the number of sunspots on the sun changes. With the more sunspots, the more temperature, and the fewer, the cooler. Just about 0.5 degrees Celsius each. So, you know, not like a significant amount. And usually, the amount of fluctuation between years is relatively random, and the temperature charts have only been rising, not jumping around randomly or rising and falling. Tectonic plate movement will also affect the temperature of the planet. As landmasses shift, then the flow of air and sea changes as dirt gets in the way of how much it was moving before, which changes the direction and intensity of heat distribution. And in addition, since the oceans can absorb more heat than the land can, meaning that if you have a higher surface area of ocean in places that absorb more sunlight, like the equator, then global temperatures will be cooler than if it's land. Related to this would be the El Niño Southern Oscillation, which is a massive tropical storm from the Pacific Ocean that blows into South America every about 3 to 10 years, caused by a shift in the southeast trade wind, allowing warm, hot air to flow to South America, which also increases global temperatures. But again, not by a whole lot. And finally, we have orbital changes. Just about every 100,000 years, Earth's orbit changes shape. Every 41,000 years, the axis changes its tilt. And every 23,000 years, the wobble of its axis changes. And these changes alter ever so slightly where and how much intensity of solar radiation hits the planet. But if you haven't noticed, all of these take a very long time, are very noticeable, or are very small. And none of them cause an exponentially massive change like what we're seeing now. So let's talk about the real reasons why this is happening. Or in other words, why it's our fault. And the first reason is transportation. Our cars, trucks, ships, planes, and all the other vehicles we use cause a fuckload of greenhouse gases. And this represents 27% of all our emissions globally, and in the US specifically, our number one cause of emissions are cars with 4.6 tons of emissions each. But as far as percentages go, trucks produce more at 23% of all greenhouse emissions. Second is the process of generating electricity, which also produces a ton of greenhouse gases. About 25% of all greenhouse emissions and 60% of the power in the US comes from a form of power generation that produces greenhouse gases. Which you'd know if you listened to the renewable energy episode. You fuck. Anyways, the third reason why it's our fault is our industrial output. In the US, 24% of all greenhouse gases are produced by industry. And it's not like it's in things that we can really stop producing, because some of the worst offenders are base elements and cleaners, iron and steel, cement and concrete, aluminum, glass and paper. Yeah, just all the things that we constantly and incessantly use. But just in case you thought that agriculture wasn't going to catch some strays, they're also a fucking asshole, because the use of chemical fertilizers, dangerous crop management practices that absolutely prolapse the soil's boy pussy and causes generations of infertility, and the industrialization of livestock that produces a fuckload of animal shit, farts, exhalations, and salty, salty tears, the agricultural industry produces massive amounts, if not only, greenhouse gases, but also contributes to climate change by fucking up the entire biosphere of the region and contaminating the planet. Oil and gas obviously also contribute heavily to climate change and greenhouse emissions, because every step of the process, from collecting to refining to consuming the oil and gasoline, causes pollution and greenhouse emission. And the structures we use for collecting them tends to disrupt shit. You know, like the pipelines that sometimes stretch for miles that occasionally need massive deforestation, swamp draining, or river filling to accomplish. Like, you think that that doesn't affect the climate? But speaking of structures, even our buildings can cause climate change. Firstly, because cities and buildings are massive heat sinks. Being made up of material like cement, glass, metal, and concrete that absorb heat, combined with usually being in colors that also absorb heat, like the black asphalt that all of our roads are made of, and the pitch of suburban roofs, or the gray of rooftops, cities and urban areas create massive pockets of high temperature, which, as you might imagine, affects all that very delicate heat distribution that affects climate. Also, they tend to block air currents and weather, which also changes the climate, and the heating systems, cooling systems, appliances running, and our waste disposal systems and roadways all cause a ton of greenhouse emissions and collect heat like a motherfucker. And of course, something that all of these have in common is deforestation and desertification. That one's a hard one to say. Deforestation is when you cut down trees, which actually kind of triple fucks us. The first way is that it reduces soil binding. Now, if you're not familiar with American history, this is the Dust Bowl. Basically, if you reduce the soil binding, dirt comes up a lot easier. Now, also, trees reduce temperature, not only because they absorb some of the heat, but also because they're really shitty conductors. So they prevent some local heating, which again, causes local climate's temperature to lower, which is why forests tend to be cooler. And third, trees absorb CO2 and other contaminants, which helps not only store them, but they process the CO2 into breathable air And some of those contaminants for us are tasty for them. Now, mind, not many, but some. So when you cut them down, it prevents that tree from absorbing any more, and can also reduce whatever they have absorbed into either the atmosphere or the soil. Desertification is when normal land turns into desert. And this happens due to drought, high heat conditions, and poorly managed agriculture, and also deforestation. And all of this tends to happen around cities, industry, and agriculture. Which is why LA, which was initially built in kind of a desert environment, is becoming more and more of an extreme desert. But the last and least impactful is lifestyle choice, which is only about 4% of total emissions, but hey, any little bit hurts. Our lifestyle in the US consumes a bigger load of electricity than I leave in your waifu's bed sheets, and we have a whole lot of irresponsibly sourced and produced products in the US that we buy either because we don't know or because we don't care. Or because we don't have another choice, which is another big problem, especially if you're woke and also poor. Also, unnecessary driving and wasting food, and even something like eating meat can increase our personal emissions. Okay, so now we know what's happening, and we know why. So then what happens because of climate change? Well, firstly, increasing temperature. I mean, no shit, we've been talking about that the whole time. And again, this has been about 1 degree Celsius since the Industrial Revolution, two-thirds of which in the last few decades. Also, climate change increases the frequency and intensity of weather events, including heat waves, droughts, and floods. And related to this is increasing precipitation extremes, making some places wetter and others drier. And there has to be a pussy joke in there somewhere. But also, rising sea levels for largely the same reason. And again, there has to be a pussy joke in there somewhere. And finally, shifting the natural patterns and living ranges for both plants and animals, changing and confusing their seasonal behaviors and migrating patterns. Which, if you aren't familiar with why that's an issue, firstly, touch grass, but secondly, because these pattern changes collapse niches, causes invasive species to spread, and also brings them closer to human habitation, which is bad for everyone, but mostly them. But that's all the how, why, and what covered, so now let's look at why this started in the first place. So we begin 2.4 to 2.1 billion years ago. Oh yeah, strap in, this is going to be a long one. Now we're not going to go through that big of a timeline, but this date is important because it's the first ice age, the Huronian Ice Age. This was when the entire planet was covered in ice and snow due to high levels of oxygen. But this ended 2.1 billion years ago, and then we got another ice age 850 million years ago, about 1.25 billion years after the first one. The Cryogenian Ice Age also occurred because of high levels of oxygen and low levels of CO2, but also because of volcanic activity combined with the breaking up of the supercontinent Rodina. And this lasted until 635 million years ago, including the period around 770 million years ago that we call Snowball Earth. And granted, all of this is also highly speculative as far as causes go. We know it happened from sedimentary ice and fossil records, but not the exact cause. We then have a third ice age, the Andean Saharan Ice Age, from 460 to 430 million years ago, lasting much less than any other so far. Fourth was the Karoo Ice Age, 360 to 260 million years ago, where the evolution of land plants causes a massive worldwide plummet in temperature. Yeah, you heard that right. We hit our fourth of five ice ages when plants evolved, and we're still in the middle of our most recent one. Well, I mean, should be at least. Anyways, 305 million years ago, during this ice age, we actually have the Carboniferous period, which caused the planet to begin to pull out the Karoo like I can't pull out the pussy. And this is because of a buildup of greenhouse gases caused by the generally swampy, heavily forested conditions across the planet. This eventually causes the planet to warm, dry, and become more seasonally fluctuating, which would then allow for the rise of the dinosaurs. 120 million years ago is also one of our best pieces of evidence for natural climate change was still alive. The shells of Foraminifera dredged up from ocean core samples. Their chemical composition shows us the difference of water temperature and chemical availability at the time, which is in this for two reasons. One, science is cool, and I think that's pretty fucking neat. But also, to bash that one idiot that thinks that climate change is made up or is entirely our fault around the head and face. Modern climate change is certainly our fault, and climate change is absolutely real, but that doesn't mean that all climate change ever is our fault. Don't be dumb. Anyways, using that data, we also discover that 90 million years ago was the warmest that the ocean had been for the past 150 million years. Meaning, from 150 million years ago to the present. And while we don't exactly know why, the leading theory is a super greenhouse period where we had so much fucking earth stank that we heated up the water to a whole 86 degrees Fahrenheit compared to the modern average of, like, 60. Which is insanely high. That is almost bathwater temperature. Or so I've heard. I'd prefer showers. Tall, fat, and bathtub don't mix. 66 million years ago is when we entered the Cretaceous Paleogene extinction, which is that funky cool time where God looked down at Earth playing with its dinosaur toys and getting real silly with it and said, "Nah, you don't get to have fun," and hucked an asteroid into the planet so goddamn hard that forced the planet into an impact winter and dropped the temperature a fuckload. So much so that 10 million years later, the Earth started picking up the pieces during the Paleocene-Eocene thermal maximum. The planet warming somewhere between 9 and 14.4 degrees, that didn't turn the planet into the biggest, messiest soup boiler ever. Also, for the temperature to rise that much in 10,000 years is fucking insane with how fast that is. And we've achieved about one-tenth of that in about one-hundredth of the time. Wild, isn't it? Anyways, we don't exactly know why this thermal maximum happened, but our best estimation is a combination of volcanic eruptions and a fuckload of marine sediment getting picked up from the ocean floor and releasing a ton of methane. But not all is hot, ready, and begging for cream, as 2.6 million years ago, we entered the Quaternary Ice Age, which is the current one that we're in. Yes, Earth gets hotter than this, and no, not this quickly. But this age was caused by the planet's orbit beginning to wobble and woogle a bit different than it did before. 800,000 years ago, the oldest ice we have evidence for existing formed. Which is, again, just a cool fact that I found that will be depressing once we find out that the last of it melted. Anyways, about 11,700 years ago is when glaciers around the world begin to retreat, allowing for the land masses we know now to take shape during the interglacial period, called the Hylocene, which lasts until maybe 1712, or just under 10,000 years. And why 1712? Well, because this is the first proposed date of the Anthropocene, when we create the first piece of modern industrial machinery, the Newcomen atmospheric engine, which takes heated air from the environment and uses it to operate a piston. However, another common starting point is the Industrial Revolution between 1800 and 1870. And just to keep note, the average global temperature at that point was 56.48. We'll be checking in on increases on occasion. In 1859, Irish physicist John Tyndall finds out that some gases can trap infrared radiation, i.e. heat, and suggests that they could cause climate change, which is totally not going to come back later. And 20 years later, the International Meteorological Organization compiles and standardizes global temperature data, which again, is totally not going to come up later. But by 1896, we're already seeing the consequences of the Industrial Revolution. Svante Arrhenius, who's, I believe, Swedish, which is why his name is weird, records a substantial increase in global temperature, about 0.3 degrees Fahrenheit. Which, again, doesn't sound like much, but the fact that it's noticeable is the problem. A year later, T.C. Chamberlain creates the first model for global carbon exchange, which also is totally not going to come up again. And these trends continue until 1914, when World War I double fucks us. How? Well, on one hand, it super industrializes a ton of Europe and the Americas to be involved in the war effort and keep up with the war. On the other hand, it burns down basically 3/4 and 9/10 of all of Europe. Which, you know, industry, pollution, fire, and also getting rid of all the goddamn trees will make global warming a lot worse. And in the period between 1920 and 1925, the Persian Gulf and Texas oil fields become a big deal. Which, as you might imagine, floods the worldwide markets with very cheap oil. Oh boy, things are getting out of hand. In the 1930s, we notice a trend of global warming. And somehow, despite knowing that oil is made out of carbon, and industry produces a lot of CO2, and also those discoveries from John Tyndall and T.C. Chamberlain were somehow... And T.C. Chamberlain, we somehow suspect nothing is happening. Until 1938, when Guy Stewart Callender suggests, hey, you know what's probably causing it to get hotter? The giant motherfucking smokestacks diarrheaing out CO2 and smog 24/7. And, well, you know, he turned out to be right. Oh, also, the global average temperature had increased by another 0.3 degrees Fahrenheit, which, again, none of us saw as an issue. But we didn't have time to think about that, because we had Nazis to punch. And forced to burn, cities to burn down, civilians to light on fire, tanks to mass produce, and heavy metals to mine. Yeah, World War II did the same thing to the environment that World War I did. Fucked the entire thing. But hey, to be fair, I'm not going to be one of those crazy environmentalists that say that's the worst part of the war. It's just yet another consequence of one dude in 1914 choosing to shoot a head of state instead of eat a sandwich. Wild, isn't it? Anyways, after the war, we start to understand climate change more and more as world powers begin to invest heavily in science. Like the U.S. Office of Naval Research essentially signing a blank check in 1945 to the field of science as a whole for the low, low cost of, please, for the love of God, anything we can use to kill the Russians. And it turns out we could use climate change. I mean, eventually, it'd be really slow. 10 years later, probably because of this behavior, we have the first computer model of the world's atmosphere, created by Norman Phillips, which I cannot describe to you how impressive that is. We often say that the moon landing was done with the computing power of a potato, but this is far more impressive. This man created an accurate analytical model of our entire planet's atmosphere, not just before the internet, but a full 14 years before we used America's second favorite carb to send men to the goddamn moon. Granted, this computer was probably the size of all 6 of my Lambos and your mother, but still. The next year, the dynamic duo of William L. Dond and Maurice Ewing, I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce that, creates a model for why the climate is changing so quickly compared to the research on previous epochs. And guess what they found? Yep, it's our fault. But no time for that, because in 1957 and 1958, we're fully invested in the space race. Which actually brings some attention to climate studies, and we realize that, seems like we're making too much carbon dioxide and our planet can't handle it. Also, at the time, there was a belief that, you know, it'd all be fine because the oceans could absorb it all, which would have caused us to have an ocean made out of carbonic fucking acid, but that was disproven as well. That we have too much CO2 for the fucking ocean. And at that point, we probably should have realized that we were fucked, but somehow we didn't. Instead, we started to lose focus as the 1960s come around, and the global temperature fucking nosedives despite a rise in CO2. Which is weird. In 1965, there's an international meeting in Boulder, Colorado to discuss this weirdness and other weirdness, and some people at the meeting say that's because the climate is just chaotic and random, while others say that's our fault. And if you can tell from our breakdown of how El Nino in South America affects the entire planet's climate and drops the global average temperature, the climate is in fact not random. And this meeting tends to agree. And it's no surprise that a few years later, the International Global Atmospheric Research Program is established to record climatological information and predict weather patterns. Which they do get a lot of data that actually establishes a lot of what we know about climatology today. And by 1970, environmentalism is such an active faction on the world stage and the U.S. that we have our first Earth Day in 1970, and the U.S. National Ocean and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, begins to lead the charge on funding climate research. However, in the same year, we notice that, those aerosols we keep using have really been fucking up the atmosphere. And the ozone layer specifically, well, whatever, that'll fix itself. Not getting the memo that everything's supposed to be chill now because we named a day after Earth, the scientific community freaks the fuck out a year after that, and they start doing the math and realize mouth-fucking Mother Earth is probably not a good thing to do. These alarm bells largely go unheeded, even as droughts across the major food producers in Ukraine, Africa, and India cause a global food shortage that threatens to take the cheeseburgers out of our fat American gobs. And this gets our attention for long enough to notice that all of those aerosol cans and airplane exhaust pipes we've been pointing directly at the ozone layer have been actively destroying it. And at the same time, recognize a big reason why the world is on fucking fire is because of a combination of CO2, methane, and massive deforestation across the entire planet to tear down paradises and put up parking lots. Basically, it's like the Donald Glover meme of him walking into the room on fire with pizza, but if he had been there the whole time eating the pizza and just not paying attention. And in 1977, climate change is recognized as the chief risk to all human life and our existence as a species. So, in 1978, in an effort to address that, we in the U.S. try to organize international coordinated climate research to save our species. Which gets shot down by the National Climate Program Act, which was basically America slapping its cock on the table, giving a good smack across the broadside, and telling the world to suck it or we'll burn the entire place down. Yes, America killed an attempt to save the human race because we wanted to be the ones that made the plan. But of course, we aren't done telling the planet to keep sucking and get the balls too, because in 1981, Ronald goddamn motherfucking Reagan, voted the uncle you should leave your kids with the least, decides to take environmentalism behind the woodshed and say it's leftist hippy-dippy bullshit, which links conservatives to climate change denial for basically ever. Also, 1981 was the hottest year on record at the time, with a global average temperature of about 64 degrees Fahrenheit. But don't worry, we have a solution. Sulfate aerosols. Because we believed that would cool the climate. And hey, hope rises. And immediately falls as the ozone layer bursts the fuck open in 1985 over Antarctica. Which is very bad because ozone absorbs UV radiation, the primary cause of skin cancer from the sun. Fucking cool. But luckily, the Global Climate Coalition comes to the rescue in 1989, with membership including American Electric Power, American Iron and Steel Institute, Amoco, ARCO, BP, Chemical Manufacturers Association, Chevron, Daimler Chrysler, Dow Chemicals, DuPont, Enron, ExxonMobil, Ford Motors, General Motors, Shells, and Texaco. Yes, this was a climate denial group. And they pushed lobbying and propaganda in the U.S. to stall and backpedal on climate protections. Why? Corporate profits. which is why I'm in favor of taking karma into our own hands and pumping crude oil directly into their corporate offices, turning out all the lights, and giving them a single match to find their way out. It's also why I don't feel bad when anyone in the leadership of any of these companies have any kind of tragedy. Anyways, by 1997, we've instated both the Kyoto Protocol and Montreal Protocol. Under these, we've managed to reduce pretty heavily the use of aerosols, but since the Kyoto Protocol has a word that sounds foreign, and that also, for some reason, I can't pronounce, Americans heavily oppose the whole controlling our greenhouse emissions thing. But despite all of these efforts internationally, by 2002, the planet's albedo drops. And what is that? Well, besides an anime waifu with hip wings, massive titties, and is probably more of a throat goat than a literal goat's throat, don't think about that one too long, the albedo is a measurement of reflected brightness. Also, the light levels on our fucking planet got lower. And this combination means only one thing. We polluted the planet to the point where light is getting fucking stuck in the atmosphere. We fucked up our own planet so hard that we've done a thing that scientists didn't think could happen before that point. And to cap it all off, before we get too depressed, in 2005, the Kyoto Treaty is created and signed by every major industrial power. Except one. And no, not Russia or China or some other unknown super polluter. No, the United Goddamn States of fucking America. And Jesus Christ. Alright, let's go to the current. Alright, so now that we're good and depressed, let's take that energy and put it into being blindingly enraged. Because that's a healthy response, and definitely not just coping with being entirely powerless. So let's talk about the world scale first. The gas most produced worldwide is carbon dioxide, at 76% of all emissions. Which shouldn't be surprising, considering that it's a pretty easy compound to make and is one of the direct results of one of our first inventions, controlled fire. Second is methane, at 16%, which, again, makes sense. It's fart gas, and the amount that livestock puts off alone is horrific. Not to mention you. You specifically. Third is nitrous oxide at 6%, and finally is fluorinated gas at 2%. Which, again, makes sense. These are both rarer compounds to create in manufacturing, and are usually at the least a little bit frowned upon. And the sectors causing this greenhouse production is, first, electric and heating production at 25%. Which means that, yes, if our power grids worldwide went green, we'd cut about a quarter of all emissions instantly. Which is neat, but we'd also have a whole episode on why that is a fucking nightmare. Second is our emissions from agriculture and land usage, including forestry and landfills, at 24%. Which is a little harder to get rid of, but we could reduce it. Third is industry, at 21% of emissions. And raise your hand if you also thought that was lower than you... Also, raise your hand if that was lower than you thought it would be. Don't put your hand down. Keep it up until the episode ends. Otherwise, I'll find you and eat your spleen through your goddamn knees. Anyways, transportation only accounts for 14% of emissions. And again, raise your hand if you thought that'd be lower. Same rules apply. Other forms of energy account for 10% of global emissions, and buildings themselves and their maintenance and usage accounts for only 6%. Which does solidly mean that while our cities are a problem, they aren't the problem. But, I mean, who's causing the most pollution? I mean, as of 2014, at least. The source I use hadn't been updated in a while, and you're fucking crazy if you think I'm going to pay for access to a paper I barely understand for about 15 seconds of audio. In order, it's China at 30%, which has absolutely gone down since because they're super focused on reducing climate change right now. America at 15% because we're a bunch of douchebags. The EU at 9% because they're... European. India at 7%, which is fucking shocking, given that a few of their cities have air quality so low that smoking a whole pack of cigarettes is a better idea than stepping out of your apartment, and also their population is over a billion people. Russia at 5%, which is actually better than I expected, and Japan at 4% of total worldwide emissions. And every other nation is 30%. Meaning that as of 2014, we Americans produce as much pollution as half of the nations in the world. Speaking of us, where do our emissions come from? Well, in first place, we have transportation, accounting for 28% of total emissions in the US, which is double the global average. Because so many goddamn people have cars and none of our cities are fucking walkable. Second is electric power at the same percentage of emission as is average. Third is industry at 23%, or 2% higher than average. And, I mean, that gives a shrug for me. We're industrialized, that's expected. But our numbers drop off a cliff from here, with fourth being commercial and residential emissions taking off 14%, which is roughly equivalent to the usage by buildings globally, which is more than double the emissions. And why is that? I mean, no fucking clue. I've never lived anywhere but the U.S. And finally is our agriculture at 10% of emissions, which is actually 14% lower than global average. But it's also because we ship a lot of food. However, these numbers don't take something very important into account. The end usage of electricity. Because sure, generating power makes up a quarter of our pollution, but it's not like we can just stop using oil. We're addicted, and we're also an oil kleptocratic plutocracy. So if you measure it by that, well, then the numbers shift. First is industry at 30% of emissions, commercial and residential at 30%, transportation at 29%, and finally agriculture at 11% of all of our emissions. Meaning, in the US, we are the problem, at least in part. But what's the true effect of the individual? Well, I mean, worldwide, the average person produces about 4 tons of CO2 a year, which is actually a quarter of if you live in the U.S. The average American produces 16 tons apiece. Which, sure, if you want to feel guilty about, go ahead. I mean, because we're part of the problem, and definitely frivolously use basically everything that causes emissions. But I'd advise you feel less guilt and more anger, because the top 100 corporations in the world produce 71% of all global emissions. And the combined production and use of fossil fuels and all industry plant-wide produces 37.15 billion metric tons of CO2. Which means that would take 2.3 billion Americans to rival that. So yes, you should be reducing your emissions. But that doesn't mean fuck all if the people who control the purse strings, the government, and your job don't give a single fuck and implement actual good changes into the world. Which, I mean, I doubt will happen, but if we did the whole crude oil blackmail trick, how would they do that? Let's discuss in the Opinions and Solutions section. And we have some actual solutions this time. Alright, so let's break it down based on greenhouse emissions by sector. Beginning with electric power, because we've talked about it before. And here we have some options, depending on if we're okay using fossil fuels or not. Because if we are, then we could increase the efficiency of them. By using both cleaner and more energy-dense ones, like natural gas instead of oil, and also using better materials for the heat exchange and more modern designs for power plants, we can use less for the same or greater effect. Also, we should probably convert stuff like coal and oil plants to things that are better for the environment. We could also do carbon capture and sequestering. Basically, if at the end of the process, instead of having smokestacks in the air, you could put some carbon filters to absorb the carbon dioxide, and then take those in tankers to disposal sites where they're injected deep into the earth in geologically stable sites as a landmine for our future generations to discover. If that isn't your cup of tea, however, you could always follow the advice we had on the renewables episode. You know, the thing about switching to renewable energy. Or if you really like having unmanageable waste products, we could always do nuclear. And regardless, we also need to increase end-use efficiency, which is making electricity usage and demand a lot lower. And there's a whole lot of tech ways we could do this, but seriously, business owners and industrialists that totally watch this, shut your goddamn lights off and stop hogging electricity. It's actually a major problem, and you're a big part of it. For transportation, the biggest thing we can do is switch to new fuel sources that produce less CO2. Like hydrogen, electric, natural gas, biofuel. Hell, one of my friends even used to talk about trying a steam engine, a steam pressure engine. Of course, the downside to things like hydrogen, natural gas, and steam pressure is that impacts are disastrous. And also with like electric vehicles, them catching on fire is also a lot worse. I mean, hey, we can increase fuel efficiency. Like make vehicles lighter, more aerodynamic, and smaller. Or make engines that are more efficient. Or fuel combinations that burn slower. But a part of this is going to be on behavior. So, like, improving our operational practices to minimize fuel usage and vehicle maintenance. So, nudge, nudge, business owners, we'll save you money. Stuff like reducing taxi times for airplanes, reducing idling, driving the goddamn speed limit, and planning your route better to reach where you want to go on less gas. The other thing is reducing the demand on transportation. Like having better urban planning to, you know, make the cities walkable and enjoyable to walk through. You know, things like mixed zoning laws and bigger sidewalks and bike lanes with smaller roads. And also, while we're redesigning the American city, how about buses and subway systems that not only work well, but are on time and where the workers are treated well? You fuck. Public transportation will reduce vehicles on the road, but so will having cities you can easily get where you want to be on foot. Now for industry. Here, the big thing is going to be efficiency. Which, luckily for those industrialists I know listen, this is good for your bottom line too. Because it'll save you on power and fuel, while also increasing production capacity. So, invest in industrial technologies to do that. Also, invest in fuel switching when possible. Like with the power generation and your vehicles. Also, recycle as many of your materials as possible. Like if you run a business that cuts out corrugated steel sheets, take all the scrap pieces, strip off any of those totally safe to breathe in coatings you put on it, and melt it down to be used again. Steel doesn't lose its strength when recycled, so, you know, go ham. Or if you make windows, are you going to tell me that glass gets shittier the more times you run it through? No, glass is glass. If an employee drops a window, just send it through again. Also, implementing trainings on efficiency and emission leaks, and also, let an expert educate you and your company on it. You fuck. For residences and businesses, there's a few breakdowns here. For homes and commercial structures, you can reduce energy usage by having better insulation and enveloping, like not building the entire fucking thing out of drywall, and unplugging things that aren't in use. For wastewater systems, we need to make them more energy efficient and distribute clean water in a way that makes more logistical sense. And it's the same with waste in general, and other things like AC and refrigeration. Like, let's maybe stop using refrigerants that will not only kill us, but also the planet. Okay. And then finally, agriculture and land usage. For the management of crops, the best thing would be to stop over-nitrogenizing the soil, and instead, use the amount appropriate for the crop in question. Also, draining excess water, because standing water that's unnecessary will literally create new weather and also make a few assloads of methane gas. Especially if, like, there's something, like, floating in the water, like, intentionally or, I guess, unintentionally, we'll do that too. But yeah, like, if there's something, like, floating in the water, like, you're trying to grow something that floats in water that doesn't need to, you should probably drain it just to cut down the methane. Another helpful thing would be tilling less. And then land usage in general should be better. Like, we need to keep as many plants around as possible. We shouldn't have grass lawns. Accept chaos. Let the native plants take over your yard. Dance naked around the blackberry bushes in a pagan ritual. Let your neighbors call the cops. They won't be able to get through the waist-high native grass and shrubbery to catch you. Speaking of acting like a fucking animal, manage your livestock. Feed them better and let them live a less stressful life. Both reduces methane. Also breeding them to not be so fucking farty and letting them have some elbow room. Something that, you know, most farmers are actually in favor of. Because believe it or not, most farmers actually care for their livestock, like, emotionally. And also really do not want to be in, like, constant fart stank. Especially of, like, cows. Fucking farty animals. Also, let's, you know, not graze them in places where they'll just fuck everything up forever. And finally, control your shit. Like your literal butt nuggets. Keep your turds in check and capture the methane to use as fuel. Or to huff. That'll really fuck you up. I don't condone that, though, because that's also super dangerous and might just straight up kill you. Regardless, we need to slash our fossil fuel production and use of massively. Like, worldwide for everyone, we need to use less. Including ending subsidies for them, using inflation reduction and research grants into renewable and clean energy. And we also have to protect our forests and natural places, and also reduce our overall waste and garbage. We can't turn around entirely at this point, but we can, at the very least, try to reduce its impact. So that being said, and since every little bit counts, what can we do specifically? Well, us little guys have 11 options. First, speak up. Make your concerns about climate change known. On social media, to your elected officials, and their email box, to your friends and family, tell everyone and hound people that don't know or don't care until they at least pretend they give a shit. Second, power your home with renewables. Check with your utility company, or change if you can, to see if they use a lot of renewables and have been certified as green or clean. That's not possible. Look into solar panels and try to reduce your power bill. I mean, or just one of those. Either one will help. Third, weatherize your home. Rely less on heaters than AC. And you can do this in one of two ways. The first way is find ways to passively reduce the number of drafts in your home, increase the amount of insulation you have, find ways to create efficient energy exchanges with the outside, and hell, I mean, even like tall plants on the sunny side for some coolness during the summer. Or, I mean, hey, even hanging blankets from doorways in winter does wonders. And trust me, we've been doing that for a couple of years. Like, it's really good. The other way you could do it is to suck the fuck up and stop being soft and learn to deal with the seasonal weather differences. We're too domesticated these days. This is an easy way to toughen up and reduce your bills at the same time. Fourth, get energy-efficient appliances. Check their efficiency rating and buy the most efficient ones when it's time to get new ones. And recycle the old ones by either finding other uses for them, or taking them apart and scrapping the parts like a more methy-eyed thing. Or take them to a responsible disposal place. Or, I mean, fuck man, get a few extra bucks from it and sell it to a guy that's extra handy who just so happens to need a broken fridge from 1974 to fix his home thermonuclear reactor. Fifth, you can reduce your water waste. Take shorter showers, use more efficient taps and toilets, and even tiny things like turning off the water when you brush your teeth. Which you should have been doing anyways, but still. Also, if only 1% of homes in the US switch to more efficient water fixtures, we save about 100 million kilowatt hours per year. Which is about 700,000 hours of hell diving. Do your part. Sixth, reduce your food waste. We have a whole episode on this. Go listen to that one for more info. Seventh, buy more efficient light bulbs, and eight, pull the plugs. Not on grandma, but on appliances and outlets you aren't using. The average home has 65 devices drawing power from their outlets, which is an idle load that absorbs power from the top 50 power plants in the US. Unplug stuff when you're not using them, and if that's inconvenient or impossible, make sure stuff is on the lowest level of auto sleep when not in use. Ninth, drive more fuel-efficient vehicle and do regular maintenance. Like with hybrids or fully electric cars, you'd save an average of 54.5 miles to the gallon. which is saving a lot of money and fuel. And if every vehicle met current clean power standards, you'd save an average of 54.5 miles to the gallon, which is fucking insane. Like, my car, like, if my car was running by those standards, I'd get an extra 708.5 miles to the tank, bring my SUV up to 1,060 miles a tank. But instead, you should try walking more, because number 10 is walk when possible. It's good for you, gets you outside, and face-to-face with other issues facing our world, lets you explore, and also is something that not only slashes carbon emissions, but gets your brain working, because the human brain is meant to be in motion. Also, rethink taking a plane. Trains are a lot more fun. And while buses aren't as fun, don't sleep on the efficiency of public transport. They're also a lot more fuel efficient. And finally, reduce, reuse, and recycle. But with all those solutions, let's talk about some dumb American opinions to figure out why we can't have nice things. So, first is a fill-in-the-blank question. Is climate change causing blank to people, and will it get blank? The first blank can be filled in with the amount of harm, and the second is if it will get better or worse. 43% of people believe climate change will cause a great deal of harm, and 63% think it'll continue to get worse. Which is surprising that the majority aren't a bunch of stupid, idiot, dum-dums. 28% think it'll cause some harm, while another 28% says it'll cause a little to no harm. And there's the dummies. 33% also think things will continue to be the same, and only 3% thinks will get any better, which, I honestly, that's kind of fair. And when you ask some Americans how much they'll have to sacrifice, we find that 48% of them think it'll be something minor, and only 23% think it'll be something major. However, we still have dummies because 28% say they won't have to at all. Now, this excludes climate change deniers, obviously. Interestingly, but not surprisingly, these proportions change the age group, with 85% of the 18 to 29-year-old bracket feeling like they'll need to give something up, while 37% of the 65 and older bracket don't think they have to give up anything. Which, unfortunately, is true. They're too old for any of this to affect them. They'll be dead by then. It's the youth that have to deal with consequences. Which is why, as the demos get older, they think they'll have to give up less and less. Politics also changes this, with 46% of the right thinking they won't need to give anything up, and 54% of the left giving up minor things. Part of this, unfortunately, is probably due to fatigue. I mean, think, people have been bashed over the head with environmentalism since they were, what, maybe 5 or 6 years old? And while young people have taken to it, it makes sense that the older generations, who've been told that it's their fault for years, would be numb. And we can see how climate news makes people feel. I mean, 70% of people feel sad about the climate, another 53% feel anxious. And while 50% are motivated to do something about it, only 38% feel any kind of optimism. And 44% are confused by the sheer breadth of information available, much less the intentional muddling done by people with ulterior motives. 79% hate that this is political, while 53% of Americans are suspicious of the people pushing for climate action, and 33% are annoyed at the amount of attention it gets. And all these emotions mean that Americans aren't really doing anything because, at best, only the optimistic or motivated ones, and the ones that hate the politics, have really much hope of even trying to do something. But most people still believe that there will be a lot of environmental harm still. 73% of people believe that plants and animals will go extinct. Not only that, but heat waves will cause a fuckload of deaths to 61%, and widespread droughts will dry out rivers for 54% of people, while rising sea levels will cause massive relocations among 58%. 55% of people also believe that machines will not be used to take CO2 out of the air, and 54% say the government won't modify weather to help, which also is absolutely a thing that we could do, but it's not really worth the effort because of all the logistics. However, on the more positive side, 57% believe we're going to transition to renewables, and also 65% believe we're going to majorly upgrade our infrastructure to withstand changing weather conditions. Which I think shows that we have a full understanding that we're killing the planet, and don't really have hope that we'll do things that might actually help in favor of doing things that just stall full-on societal collapse. Which is kind of the road that we're on with this, by the way, before all of us die. But with all of that in mind, who do people think can help in this crisis? Well, the biggest, 71% of respondents, think the energy industry can. And 69%, nice, think the large business can. And this makes sense, because both are primarily at fault for causing all of this shit in the first place, so they ought to be the ones to unfuck all of us. Meanwhile, 66% of people say that the feds can help, which again makes sense because they fucked us all. But also, they're supposed to have the power to do something, so maybe they should. And it's the same with cities, 69%, nice, of people say that they can do something too. Although this is a much lower percentage that see them as being able to do a whole lot with... Although it's a much lower percentage that see them as being able to do a whole lot, with 40% saying they can do a whole lot, compared to the 55% of the energy industry, 52% of large businesses, and 47% of the feds. Individuals, however, can't really do too much, to 13% of people, and to 36%, we can do a little. Which I think shows that most people are at the very least a little bit aware that we're not going to save the environment by eating vegan, taking the bus, and recycling our plastics when there are companies that are actively dumping billions of tons of CO2 directly into the atmosphere and millions of tons of chemicals into the oceans. But on the individual level, 52% of people think that the biggest impact will be life changes, like we discussed in the solutions section. And 23% believe that the biggest positive impact is going to be new technologies. And unfortunately, for some goddamn reason, 24% of people think that climate change isn't even an issue, which is a big enough population to be a problem, but not big enough to dedicate time needed to change their minds. Which means we're in the fuck zone again. And zooming out to the US's places on the rest of the world, 30% of people think that we do less than other nations, 32% think that we're doing the same amount, and 36% say that we're doing more. Which is both accurate and inaccurate. Because we're doing more, yes, but we're not really doing anything effectively more. We're doing more work, but to less effort, but to less effect, because we refuse to do anything to address the people actually causing the issue. But 56% of people think that we should be pulling our own weight, which does actually give me some hope. But let's take all of this and examine priorities. Because we agree that yes, this is a problem, that yes, it'll hurt people, and that yes, we need to change. So where do we place this existential threat to all of humanity on the list of priorities? Well, not high. Only 37% of people on average put it at top priority. If you go to a place where the environmentalists are, the left side of the political spectrum, only 59% see it as top priority. Which again is bonkers because it's a massive existential threat. And even then, comparing how much people care to other years is dropping. In 2023, 37% of people care a lot about this, and 35% care a bit. Compared to in 2018, 44% of people cared a whole lot, and 33% cared a bit. In 2016, 36 cared a lot, 38 cared a little. But more people don't care much or at all now, more than 2018 or 2016. With 27% caring very little now, and 22% and 26% in 2018 and 2016, respectively. And sure, a lot of this is fatigue, but also a good amount of this is that we're starting to feel hopeless. What about me? How do I feel? Well, let's go to the soapbox. Well, I feel frustrated. Because this is one of those things that I know is a threat to human existence, and something I know is fixable, easily so. Like, we know exactly what we need to do. We have the technology, it's not only logistically viable, but also economically viable. In fact, the green energy business and also carbon reduction are massive potential income sources for the very energy corporations that are causing the problem. But what are we doing? Nothing. Why? Because the people that control the CO2 emissions don't want to stop because they'd rather do the easy thing that kills us all, and they'll be dead before they see the consequences of. They're too rich to suffer with us. There's a common phrase that says, when the last tree is cut down, the last fish eaten, and the last stream poisoned, you will realize that you cannot eat money. But the people that are cutting the trees down, eating the fish, and poisoning the streams will never be faced with needing to eat their own money. They can buy everything they need to survive, even something like a golden parachute off the entire fucking planet. We are fucked. They aren't. Which is why, for both legal and banned reasons, I don't advocate violence. But if it happens to them, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like that's a bad thing. The people who are causing climate change to be as big of an issue as it is will never see consequences otherwise. But the other thing is that it is indeed too late to turn back. We can't stop the climate change that's already happened. We've blown past the carbon cap to be able to contain the next series of events. So now, the best we can do is slow it down to the point that maybe someone in the future can fix it. And I know this is exhausting. With all the other shit going on, this is hard to focus on, but please don't lose sight. We will see humanity's last gasp, but we won't see it die. Our kids will. At this rate, at least. So maybe, just maybe, it's time to actually give a shit and make this a high priority. Oust the people that refuse to do anything about this and let whatever happens happen to the people who put their own self-interest and greed above the fate of the human species. But before I start advocating for violence, let's go to the conclusion. A bit more self-control than last time and other times I talk about rich people. But yeah, if I keep getting angry like that and telling you to kill rich people, I might actually get some phone calls from certain government agencies. Anyways, if you have opinions, advice on how to make the show better, how you think we can save the world, what super pollutants you're totally not going to force feed a BP exec, and really anything else you want to tell me, make sure to email me at waytatpods@gmail.com. That's waytatpods@gmail.com. Remember to check out my other podcast, Waytat Nerd, where I do basically the same thing, but with nerd topics like fantasy, sci-fi, role-playing games, etc., where I hope you like the topics just as much. And also remember to follow me on Twitter or Mastodon at WaytatPods for more episode announcements and some rants sometimes. Have a good night, don't murder, have fun, and remember, only you can prevent runaway CO2 emissions by blackmailing your choice of oil tyrant. This has been Why Are You Talking About This? I've been your host, William. Good night.